one more week. There is 1 week left in the OHL's regular season. And Dan, we still have playoff positions to sort out in this league, exactly the way you drew it up about 8 months ago.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it? I mean, playoff positions, battles at the top of the conferences and at the bottom of the conferences, and some teams still not knowing who they're going to play in the first round and probably not thrilled with who they might be lining up against.
Absolutely. Absolutely true. And it's going to come right down to the last weekend, exactly the way we love to see it. I got to spend some time up in the scenic city of Owen Sound on Saturday, watched a real scrappy attack club trying to fight for one of those final playoff spots in the West, put up a good game against the Kitchener Rangers, came up short, the attack did. But before the game, and this is why I wanted to acknowledge the trip there, I was with my buddy JC Coots, who is part of the broadcast team there in Owen Sound. He does the Bear Tracker podcast, invited me to be on the podcast, which I was more than happy to do. And we were getting set just out by the rink before the game to record it. And just as we're getting everything set up, the coaching staff of the attack walk through. So, you know, I got to be me, and my mouth is rather large. And I'm like, come on, guys, come on. Like, I'm about to have my big moment here on camera, and you got to walk right through the shot, eh? And without missing a beat, not one beat was missed when attack head coach Scott Ray turned back over his shoulder and said to JC, you better lower the camera if that guy's going to be on with you. Have you ever wondered, Dan, what first impressions of you are to other people? Because clearly I don't often, like, I know I'm short. I don't think about it a lot. Scott Ray was quick to point out that I am vertically challenged and I'm here for it. Well done, sir. Well chirped. I don't know about you, Dan. Did anybody call you too tall this past weekend?
I don't know about this past weekend. I used to get that all the time, you know, so in your case, bit of a low blow.
Hey, oh. Well, what do they call it? Then the high road, if somebody makes fun of you for being freakishly tall?
Yeah, I'll take the freakish. Yeah, freakish. Well, I have a nephew that now towers over me by about 3 or 4 inches. So I can pass the freak mantle on.
You Mahars are a strange and interesting bunch, for sure. Maybe the real freak mantle we need to add here is in the Niagara region. And I don't know, Dan, I mean, things started so well for the Ice Dogs this year. They're running near the top of the conference at different times. They're in the CHL top 10. And what do we have this past week? But another investigation, the league announcing a third party investigation into alleged inappropriate behavior on the part of Ice Dogs staff. And here we go. As if things weren't going poorly enough on the ice, they once again look pretty dim off the ice for the Niagara Ice Dogs.
Yeah, indeed. And it's just got to be yet another kick for that fan base, at, if not the players as well. I mean, you have this grind that they've come through over the last few years. Things finally looking good for the first half of this year. And then everyone was kind of wondering why they're falling off a cliff in the second half post-trade deadline. Well, this might answer a few of those questions. Obviously, there's something going on behind the scenes there that's kind of distracted people and turned things south yet again. So just one more blow for a franchise that really can't handle anymore and was doing well prior to this. So let's hope that this review turns up something and finally gets the ship staying in the right direction.
Interestingly enough, the game after the review was announced, the Ice Dogs won. And I don't think there's any coincidence between them winning that game and them getting Owen Flores back in goal. Huge part of the Ice Dogs team for sure.
Yeah, I think when we discuss these teams going in directions one way or the other, one of the things we often forget is just how much health impacts that. And you look at a team that's slumping almost always, there's a health factor there. And same with teams that are going well. Generally speaking, they're getting strong goaltending and they're running their lineup that they want. Flores is a huge loss when he was out, and Robertson as well. They've had some issues keeping goaltenders healthy this year. And if you're going down to your third and fourth stringers, with all due respect to those kids, they're pretty inexperienced and they can get run over from aggressive teams that they're facing. So yeah, I think you're right. That's a huge factor to have their number one back and ready to roll.
To the matter at hand, though, and this is just, as you mentioned, another blow to a market that I think in St. Catharines in the Niagara area that deserves a whole heck of a lot better when it comes to this investigation. The St. Catharines Standard reporting that there may have been a house party run amok and a house left trashed in the wake of that party. Also reporting that it's possible that Darren DeDobler, the team owner slash GM, was meddling in on-ice affairs when he's suspended from doing so. And that's really the big story here, as far as I'm concerned. Just before DeDobler took over the team, there was an investigation that led to accusations that a player was offered money that was never paid to him. Then there was the text message chat that went public, you know, in just as the Burke family was relinquishing its hold on the team. You've got the sanctions from bullying, harassment that this current ownership group has faced, the sanctions that followed that leading to DeDobler's 2-year suspension, which isn't even up until this June, just for the record, the suspension's not even up yet, and already another third party investigation. And I'm starting to wonder, Dan, where the league really goes from here, because what has Darren DeDobler had to show for his 3 years of ownership? Two dead last place finishes, 20th out of a 20 team Ontario Hockey League, a couple of investigations now, off-ice investigations into the goings-on in and around the team, and hitting the skids. We talked about how well things were going and how poorly they are going now for the Ice Dogs. I just, again, will come back to this market deserves better. And I'm not trying to whiz all over a guy. I don't know Darren DeDobler personally, but as somebody that follows this league, it's not difficult to see that there are problems here. And I wonder if the league just has to look at ownership across the board and say, you know what, ownership, being a member of the ownership club in this league requires more than just paying the bills.
Yeah, oh, definitely a fair assumption. And here's the thing. This is termed, a cultural review of the Niagara Ice Dogs. And let's start by saying this is not normal. This is not normal. This is not just a run-of-the-mill, oh, we're going to look at this today and see if we can turn anything up. For the league to actually officially have a cultural review of an organization, it means things have gotten pretty bad, at least in terms of accusations and information the league has received, and to step in. And to your point about ownership, Mike, I would suggest that having a cultural review completed and this investigation done thoroughly, talking to everyone involved, all the players, all the staff, et cetera, is the first step in gaining the evidence and information you need to do something potentially about ownership. And I'm just speculating, or to do something to address the problem, whether that's ownership or something else, you need to have this evidence, this report in hand. So I would look at this as step one, but it is not a normal thing. Something is rotten when the league opens up a cultural review of your franchise.
I couldn't help but think also, and I'm not trying to drag another team into this or into the mud, so to speak, but we all remember how bad things were in Flint early in Rolf Nilsson's ownership. Of course, his kid was there, and we've seen that lots of times where an owner has a child playing on the team and the mess that can make. But things were pretty bad, multiple investigations, sanctions, etc. Rolf Nilsson still owns the Flint Firebirds. He's much quieter now, if you will. We're not, you know, hearing about these investigations like we're hearing about in St. Catharines, but I'm not certain that an owner who's that much of a maverick, if you want to call it that, or that much maybe of a loose cannon, is good for the league generally. So if we leave Flint alone and say, well, it's been quiet enough there, I guess, but fan bases at some point want to see success on the ice and championships come in. And I don't know if the league wants to be in the position, or fans start to ask for a forced sale here in Niagara, as an example. You know, 3 years in, sorry, Darren DeDobler, it's not working. And the market, again, such a proud junior hockey tradition, a great arena like that. The Meridian Center is a fantastic junior hockey arena. They should have a better franchise in there. It's way too good a market for the league to, unfortunately, if you'll forgive the phrasing, waste on an owner that just doesn't seem to get it.
It's definitely true. And, you know, I look at this as just a stewardship piece for the league. The franchises are all under their purview, and they have to have a certain standard league-wide for recruitment, for engagement from the business community, et cetera, for all the obvious reasons. You need to have franchises living up to their end of the bargain, if you will, in terms of how they treat players, how the players are developed, how the off-ice operations are run. So whenever something appears off or not to standard, they have to step in and do these things. You mentioned Flint. This is what happened in Flint. And, you know, if you can't completely force a sale, you can certainly do use some tactics you have to make sure the owner stops meddling or steps back or potentially sells in the long run. And I believe that's what we're seeing here because, yeah, you have a great building. You have a really viable community to support the hockey club there. And I think this is just a case of enough is enough. We have to make sure the standards are meeting the other standards in this league because you know how, you know, once you get that toxic piece within your league, it can spread. And that's what they're trying to avoid right here.
We're pulling for you, Ice Dogs fans. We're pulling for you here, but let's just hope this can get sorted out for a market that I will say once again, deserves so much more. Let's stay, Dan, in the Eastern Conference because the top line headline is one thing, but when you read through the entire release from the Oshawa Generals, I certainly picked up on something else. But what do you make of Mario Pulio joining the Oshawa Generals coaching staff?
Well, I know you raised a slightly different take, which you'll get to, I'm sure. So my initial take was, well, that's interesting timing at this point of year to be bringing someone in at that level. And of course, with Brad Malone having taken over partway into this season, thinking the bench was a little short at that point. Had there been an extensive search to bring someone in? Is this someone who Brad Malone is familiar with? Is this addressing a need that they felt the bench had to have before playoff time? Because things have gone well for the Gens this year, but they're also in a dogfight in the East. And, you know, maybe there's something they identified that needed to be addressed and they had the right person, right time. I don't know. There's a bunch of questions I have, but all I can say with certainty is it's peculiar to bring someone in at this stage of a season. That's for sure. Without the team being in the basement and just needing wholesale changes. So it piqued my interest for sure.
It did mine too, but I'll add this to that, staying with the top line headline here before I get to my other take. And that is, this is a guy with championship experience, right? The only coach in history to win back-to-back Memorial Cup championships with different teams. He wins it in 2018 with Akiti Bathurst and then in 2019 with Ruben Noranda. So if you find a guy like that available to you at this time, I don't care what time of the season it is, and I'm thinking of Gardner McDougall down east who leaves UNB and goes and coaches St. John's, right, and won the Memorial Cup with them after St. John's got knocked out in the first round, if I have this right in the queue. But that goes to show that you can bring in a coach with pedigree and get something done in a short amount of time. So you talk about that dogfight the Gens are in. We all know this is a season of sort of unfinished business for Oshawa after making it all the way to the OHL final last year and then getting swept by London. And they're in that dogfight right now. So if you can get a guy like Mario Pulio onto your coaching staff, why not do it? So that part, I'm like, okay, clearly Oshawa wants this really badly. They know they've got the team that can compete, and maybe this is the piece that gets them over the top. What really struck me, though, Dan, is when you get to the bottom of that media release from the Oshawa Generals, it says Brad Malone remains the interim head coach. I had no idea the guy still had the interim tag on him.
That was a great pickup by you, because I on first glance, I hadn't noticed that either. But yeah, that was very curious, because you look at dynamics around the team, and for that interim tag to have never been removed suggests one of two things: ownership isn't completely sold on him as your guy, or the guy isn't completely sold on removing the tag himself and staying long term. So it could be either of those two paths. All I do know is that when you bring in someone with Pulio's resume and you're the main guy, you'd start to feel the breathing down your neck, wouldn't you? Like, you know, if I'm coaching a team and suddenly I look over my shoulder and Scotty Bowman's working the door, I'm not sure how long. Maybe I should pack my bags. I don't know.
Steve O'Rourke puts in his time as an assistant with this hockey club, graduates to the head coaching job, and in early December gets let go when the Gens are running first in their division and second in their conference. Now Mario Pulio is brought in to assist the interim head coach, Brad Malone, when the Gens are third in their division and fourth in their conference. You just touched on something that I'm wondering about, and I'm just sitting here wondering about this, but is it possible, if not likely, that Mario Puglio is the successor when it comes to head coaches with the Oshawa Generals? I don't know, but boy, oh boy, that interim tag jumped out at me as if it was all caps, bold, and in red ink.
Yeah, you'd have to assume that, wouldn't you? Because from his standpoint, why would you join the team at this stage in the season if you're not intending to stay long-term? And if you have a resume like that, are you really going to step down and not be the head guy somewhere, and at least in junior? So I don't know. There's a lot of questions that don't seem to check out, unless you're thinking he might be the guy longer term for one reason or another. And maybe this is something that's endorsed by Malone. Maybe he told the team something and they thought, we need to have our long-term guy here sooner than possible to go through this playoff run. I don't know, a lot of questions, but to me, the most logical thing is what you said, is that he's staying and he will be the guy eventually.
And if nothing else too, at this with this move at this time of the year, the Gens want it, and they want it bad. Simple as that.
Oh, well, you know, they were my pick for top in the East, right? So,
oh, so you had something to do with this? Did you put in a call?
Well, I will say, you know, it's probably going to make it look worse than it was when we look at the standings. They're really trending towards fourth, which sounds a long way from first, but we look and it's only 3 points right now. So it's that dogfight up there. I mean, the difference could have been, you know, 1 or 2 weeks of new coach or a healthy body here and there. It's that tight. So maybe they feel this will be the difference.
I might pull the diva card and refuse to go back and look at my preseason predictions. I was so wildly off base this year. It's not even funny. Okay, why does the OHL have two classes of rookie? And does more than the game matter when you go to an OHL arena? Those stories and more still to come on this week's episode of the OHL Podcast. This NHL season has been as predictable as a puck rolling on its edge. No one knows where it's going, but that just means there's time for your favorite team to figure things out, and games left for you to get in on the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. It's super easy for first-timers to get started. Try betting on something simple like picking a team to win. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app, select your team, and place your first bet. And if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. New customers only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. For additional terms and responsible gaming resources, see dkng.co/audio. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. NHL and NHL team marks are the property of the NHL and its teams. Copyright NHL 2025. All rights reserved. Dan, I mentioned at the start of this episode that we are into the final week of the regular season. So I guess that means next week will be our final wraparound of the season, where we look at every team in the league, because when the playoffs come, I think we'll just focus on those playoff matchups and see how the playoffs are playing out. So one more time after this one for the wraparound, but I do believe we've got you on Eastern Conference duty this week. I sure hope so, because otherwise I did a whole lot of work for the wrong side.
No, that's correct. I had myself as East too, so I think we're aligned.
Excellent. Okay, so start us off, I guess, in Barrie, if you would, good sir.
For sure, yeah. Barrie Colts still hovering right second place, looking for first place in the East Conference right now. And big news of the week, Keshawn Aitchison, in his draft year, breaks Brant Clark's franchise record of 23 goals in a season by a D by potting his 24th on Sunday against Sarnia, Mike, only boosting his draft status.
He's been a fun story, hasn't he? Like the whole story leading into what's been a great year and likely a selection in the first round this June.
Yeah, it looks like an NHL player all day to me. Yeah.
All right. In Erie, as I start the Western side of things, the Ides of March, you know, mid-March when things go bad for people, if you're superstitious like that, they clearly do not apply to Otters forward Sam Alfano. Alfano tied a career high with 4 points, picking up 2 goals and 2 assists in a win over Sarnia last week. Boy, Sarnia's getting picked on all of a sudden. That 4-point night for Alfano came on March the 12th. His other career 4-point night came on March 14th last year in 2024 in a win over Niagara.
He's racking up points as always.
You bet. Yeah.
All right, moving to Brampton. I mean, the big story is Brampton has caught fire, and that's not good news for anybody. But it's obviously too early to talk next year, but just wanted to point out and congratulate Angus McDonnell for signing his ELC with Dallas, coming just a couple weeks after Finn Harding signed his ELC with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So maybe that potential overage pool dwindling for the Steelheads next year.
And put a pin in that idea about the Brampton Steelheads getting hot, because I've mentioned this too and thinking they might be an interesting first round opponent for somebody, even though the Steelheads are opening on the road. We got an email that will come up in a little bit and might throw some cold water on the idea, but we'll get to that. I promise. Right now I'm going to get to Flint, where Leafs prospect Sam McHugh returned from an 8-game absence, and he's got 6 goals in 3 games since. McHugh now with 15 goals in 17 games as a Firebird. He scored 18 times in 35 games with the Owen Sound Attack this year. And also a shout out to Chris Thibodeau, who had a 5-game point streak end this week, tying his longest run of the season. Thibodeau, 5 goals, 3 assists during his just ended 5-game point streak.
That's one deadline move that's looking like it was wise by the Firebirds.
Excellent point.
So moving to Brantford, Mike, I think we all know how hot they've been the second half of the year, arguably the best team in the league. And I remember we talked in the fall about what teams might add. And we said, you know, is there just, I can see them adding a defender, a piece that's missing. Well, was Thomas Budnick that piece? 0.6 points per game, which is good for a stay-at-home defender, plus 27. And he really has stabilized that defense core. And now that we're a week out from the end of the season too, I know you mentioned him last week, but we should give a nod to Patrick Thomas, who looks like he's going to wear the OHL assist crown this year with 76, with second place at 70 right now. So a six assist lead with only 3 games to go. So a few bright spots for the Bulldogs there.
Off to Guelph. What do we say about, what do we, Dan, Peterborough has caught up to Guelph, but that's okay. Here's what we're going to look at. We're going to go classic Canadian rock. I'm sure, Dan, you like the Tragically Hip as much as I do.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Ahead by a Century, right?
Yep.
Okay. I'm just working this out here to try to make the positivity extend for the Guelph Storm. Max Namestnikov of the Guelph Storm is maybe ahead by 2 centuries, because Mad Max picked up his 200th OHL point this past week. And fittingly, it was a goal. So he's got 102 goals and 98 assists to reach the 200-point plateau. Namestnikov was originally drafted into the O by Sarnia back in 2020, who took him in the first round, 3rd overall. The Storm, though, are struggling mightily right now. Currently the owners of a 10-game losing skid.
Definitely trouble at the Sleeman House.
Amen to that. I like not the hen house, the Sleeman house.
You like that?
Yeah. There I do, yeah.
Good segue, right? So moving to Kingston, we know our buddy Joey Willis, got to give him a shout out this week, a 4-goal game against those Peets in an 8-2 win. And the Fronts just keep on rolling, 3-0 during the week, currently tied for second with 86 points, but a game in hand, looking to lock down second, if not first. Those Fronts just keep rolling.
Anytime we mention Joey Willis, I'm going to mention Charlie and the signed picture of Joey Willis he gave me. It's over my left shoulder. It's on the set here at the OHL podcast, a Joey Willis autographed picture. I don't know what I'm going to do with it except keep it here on the set, but it's here.
He's rolling since you put it up. So
there you go. You know what? The Fronts fan mail to the OHL podcast at rogers.com. Okay. As long as the Joey Willis picture stays, the Fronts keep rolling. in Kitchener. It's the story, right? It's not about the team you cheer for. It's the story that the games bring us. And it was 5 months, 53 games, 146 days, and Matthias Stark returned to the Rangers lineup. He was Kitchener's third rounder last year, only played 11 games this season before being sidelined with a concussion. He returned this weekend in a win over Owen Sound. He actually rang a shot off the post in the second period, but none of that really matters as much as the kid being healthy and back on the ice.
Absolutely. Heck of a talented kid, and just love to see that he's back because that was an awful layoff for him. All right, we're moving to Niagara, Mike, and we've already said it, so I won't belabor the point here, but the best way to fix a culture, Mike, win. And you mentioned that win they got this week. Kevin Hee in the leadership group this week takes the bull by the horns, pots two, in a win over Erie, no slouch, and looks like they have locked down seventh in the East. So now that they've stabilized their playoff spot, time to get the ship righted before the next week starts.
What is it they say? Winning is the best disinfectant?
Yes.
There's a team that knows an awful lot about winning, and this was an unintentional segue, but it works as I look at London next. Let me see here. Back-to-back 50-win seasons. Back-to-back Hamilton Spectator trophies as the OHL's regular season champions, and a sixth consecutive Midwest Division title. I think we just call that another season for the London Knights.
It's looking that way, isn't it? Pretty much every year.
Every year. Just write it down. In fact, I'm going to start making my predictions. Remember, I mentioned how bad they were this year. Just right now, I'm going to write down London for tops in the West next year, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, you have a slot filled in already. There.
Exactly.
All right. Up in North Bay, Mike, the perils of the trade deadline. So North Bay in that dogfight for the final playoff spot in the East needs every point they can get. They got one in an overtime loss to Barrie, dropped the second point, and the heroes in that game, Owen Van Steensel and Dallin Wakely, two former battalion members, they and Anthony Romani playing their last game of their career in the Memorial Gardens, probably, assuming they don't meet in the playoffs. But yeah, sometimes those moves, the players you move out, they can come back to haunt you.
In Owen Sound, it's all about a guy named Pierce, and we've talked about him a lot this season. Pierce Bowie, now the highest scoring rookie in Owen Sound history. He reached 48 points this week, Bowie passing both Colby Barlow and Joey Hischen for most points ever by a first-year player. Bowie is also just 3 goals away from setting a new attack rookie record, topping Barlow's 30-goal rookie season. That might be a tall order, but he's got the points locked down. Pierce Bowie, remember the name.
Great names he's passing there.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. In Oshawa, Mike, we talked about those Jennies battling it out in those top four slots. Well, with Beckett Seneca getting a 2-game slew foot suspension, didn't come at a great time, but they still managed to beat Ottawa in a tight game. And they need all the help they can get right now, because if they're going to get to third place, they're going to need to make up 3 points in 3 games. I know it looks like 2 in the standings, but they don't hold any of the tiebreakers, so they need 3. And why do they want to do that so badly? Because if they don't, Mike, they get those steelheads in round 1. And I think that terrifies anyone.
That's why they hired Mario Puglio. See, we might get Brampton in round 1. Come over, help us out a bit. All right. I'm headed to Michigan and Saginaw next, where it is the Caleb Papineau show in Saginaw. Andrew Oak has not played since February 27th. Papineau has made 7 straight starts, going 5-2 with a goals against average of 3.71. Really curiously around this is like not a word about Andrew Oak. He's just kind of not there. He's not even backing up, but Papineau carrying the mail for the Saginaw Spirit right now.
Yeah, and hopefully for their sake, Oak is okay.
No kidding.
All right, Mike, interesting one in Ottawa. So you talked about that coaches fight we had a couple weeks ago.
Well, yeah, give me more.
Well, we almost had round 2. So after an overtime loss to Kingston, 67's defender Matthew Mayich was hanging out a little close to celebration, maybe not thrilled with how exuberantly Tommy Uronen celebrated that goal. And of course, France coach Troy Mann said, you know, get out of here, kid. Well, 67's coach Dave Cameron didn't like that he was yelling at one of his players. There was a little back and forth. apparently came close to a round two of a coach's fight, but talk about low blows that you had off the top of the podcast. Well, apparently Troy Mann said, nice job at the World Juniors, Cameron, before he left.
Come on.
Apparently. That's the word.
Okay. I wish I could have been there to hear it. I mean, listen, if you're going to chirp, chirp the truth. That's what they say, right?
Fact. Yep.
Truth hurts. Yeah. Boy, talk about hurting. In Sarnia, the Sting woke up last Friday morning in seventh place in the West, and then they went to bed later that night in ninth. That's how tight things are in the race for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. And Sarnia has dropped five in a row at the absolute wrong time. Now, on the bright side, because we got to give you a bright side, and his name is Beckham Edwards, who just picked up goals number 23, 24, and 25 this week. The just-turned 17-year-old leads the Sting in goals with 25, sits third in points with 43, just 1 point behind overager Zach Felak and 19-year-old Easton Wainwright. So to put it simply, Beckham Edwards is a player of the future in Sarnia.
Oh, their future looks really bright. For any Sarnia fans, they're despondent over that fall in the standings. All right, well, Mike Peterborough, you kind of already hit on my wraparound point for Peterborough this week. They have caught Guelph. They are not in sole possession of last place in the OHL anymore. They've done it in the last week of the season. And I know Guelph has a game in hand, but we all know what Guelph's been doing with games in hand lately. So we'll consider it a tie, a deadlock, and we'll see what happens the rest of this week. But who would have thought that by year's end, the Peterborough Petes would not hold the last place in the OHL?
Which rink, the Sleeman Center or the Peterborough Memorial Center, starts the lottery odds? Lottery odds. It doesn't really roll off the tongue, but you know what I mean. Who starts the chant first, Dan?
I got to admit, I'm rooting for Peterborough just because of the turnaround they've had, whereas Guelph doesn't really have any reason to be there.
Remember, two wins at the end of November. That's what Peterborough had. So they have been trending in the right direction these last many months, and obviously Guelph directly opposite that. Okay, directly north, I will go to Sault Ste. Marie, who had lost three in a row coming into the weekend, and they faced a 3-3 on the road. The Sioux, one of those teams battling for the final playoff spot in the West. So a tall order, but the Greyhounds came up huge. After dropping the first game in Windsor, the Sioux got big wins in Sarnia and Flint to move into sole possession of seventh place in the West. The Hounds have a 1 point lead on Owen Sound and Sarnia with three games to go for each team. And of note, Marco Mignosa led the way this weekend with four goals and an assist in the three games.
They're in every game, Mike. They're battling like we expect from those Greyhounds. All right, I'm going to wrap things up in Sudbury. And just a little note that I found this week and starting to see it in a couple places, and that's big trade deadline acquisition, Henry Muse, third in defense scoring in the league with 82 points, massive piece of that defense core, and whispers that there's some interest from NCAA schools next year where he might be able to make the jump. Just whispers at this point, hoping for the Wolfpack that he's back, because when they make that trade and relinquish those assets, that was for 1.5 years, not 0.5.
All right, and I'll finish things up in Windsor as we wrap up the wraparound in the Western Conference, and you can make it 50 for Washington Capitals prospect Ilya Protas, who notched his 50th goal of the season, and he did it with a hat trick. Why not? Protas, the third player to reach 50 this season. His teammate, Liam Greentree, is likely to join the club and become the fourth 50-goal scorer because Greentree is sitting on 49 goals this season. In case you're wondering, when the last time was this many players scored 50, it was 2018-2019 when six players reached that milestone.
And Mike, if I could slide in one little last tidbit on Windsor while you're at them, I just wanted to give a little quick shout out to third round pick Andrew Robinson of last year, signed his ELC this week and has played three games now for the Spits. And this is a kid who was tasked with shutting down Ethan Belchets in his U16 year with the Vaughn Kings. Glad to be on his side now, I'm sure.
You think that's how it works? Like, I had to shut you down, and now I get to play with you. I think I can get used to this sort of thing, right?
Easier to facilitate offense from that guy than stop it. So, yes.
All right. Congratulations there. And that will wrap up our wraparound for this week. But we are not yet done, believe you me. Carson Harmer, leads all rookies in scoring, but I'm wondering if he should be in a class by himself. And your prospects of the week are still to come on this week's episode of the OHL Podcast. Dan, I talked during the wraparound about Pierce Bowie, and what a story he's been. To be honest with you, by Christmas time, the name might have seemed foreign to virtually everyone, but he has come on like a dump truck thundering down the road with no brakes in the second half, and he's set that new record for points by a rookie in Owen Sound, passing Hishon and Barlow, like we talked about. But, and I'm going to give credit where it's due, Greg Cowan, who's the terrific writer up in Owen Sound for the Sun Times, has been making a case, and I think he's onto something here, for the quote-unquote true rookie, the 16-year-old player. In the OHL, rookies get lumped together if they're playing in their first season. So I mentioned Carson Harmer a moment ago. I can add to that Jacob Kluche and Lev Katzen, who are three of the top five rookies in points in the OHL this year. But all three of those guys, Katzen, Kluche, and Harmer, are 17 years old. Bowie and Beckham Edwards, 16-year-olds, round out the top five OHL rookies in scoring. And to me, Dan, at this level especially, and at this age, the leap between 16 and 17, pretty damn big leap. And I'm wondering if Cowan up there in Owen Sound with the Sun Times has a case here for the quote-unquote true rookie class in the OHL. What say you?
I sure think there's a valid case. I've been harping on this with the NHL for years. And so the difference between doing something in the NHL at 19 versus 23 is massive. And same applies to the OHL. The difference between doing it at 16 and 17 is huge. To put up the kind of numbers that Pierce Bowie is putting up, and we've seen it in the past from, I mean, here, Mike, in Kitchener, we saw kids like Jeff Skinner and these kids that come in at 16. And one of my favorite things about watching this league is watching those kids figure the league out before Christmas and then just take off from there in the second half. It's such an amazing thing to watch because you know at 16, when they're able to do that, what they're going to be like at 18, 19. So I fully agree. I think there's a huge difference. It's like skipping a year in school, right? To play that well at that age. So I'm all for it. When you talk about numbers, most teams carry 3 16-year-olds. So you're talking about 60 players of that age. So being the best rookie is still amongst a sizable crop. It's not like you're saying, well, the best rookie trophy is going to one of five. So there's plenty of reason, I think, to make that ruling. And if it were me, I think it means more if you're doing it at 16.
You mentioned the NCAA during the wraparound in reference to Henry Muse and Sudbury and maybe taking an NCAA opportunity. The NCAA has figured this out when it talks about its quote-unquote true freshmen, right? Somebody that's never played a game before. And so let's just make this our appeal to the Ontario Hockey League to create this class of true rookies, not trying to take anything away from the seasons that Harmer, Kluche, Katzen, and others have. It's your first year in the league, absolutely. But I think there's room, and in fact, maybe even a necessity, to create a true rookie class so we can see what those 16-year-olds have done year over year. You nailed it a moment ago, and the way you described it, watching players kind of figure it out after Christmas, hello, I'll just bring up Pierce Bowie's name again, because I had just said before Christmas, yeah. I mean, Pierce Bowie was just kind of a player on the Owen Sound attack, and now I think everybody knows his name.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And you've referenced a couple points over the last couple of podcasts, Mike, about the type of company he keeps in that Owen Sound history. And every one of those was just an absolutely lethal star player in the OHL. And this kid's passing them. So look out, hold on tight. We talked about the future in Sarnia. Well, the future with this kid, I mean, I think he's going to be perennial top five in this league for the remainder of his stay.
I also referenced this during your wraparound, Dan, when you talked about the Brampton Steelheads. And I'm not just throwing you under the bus here, because I said last week on this podcast, I'm not so sure the way Brampton is playing and seems to have figured things out, certainly offensively, that I would want to see them in the first round. It's going to be a really interesting matchup. Well, Lowell sends an email to OHLpodcast@rogers.com and We love getting your emails. Send them anytime. Leave comments on our YouTube page, or, you know, give us a like, a subscribe, a review. We love being in touch with you and interacting with you and talking about this league. Two things came out of Lowell's email. One was he's not so sure other teams will worry all that much about playing Brampton because he didn't think they looked like they knew what they were doing in their own end. Maybe a bit of a harsh assessment, but you did allude to this earlier in the season, Dan, where if you're going to exploit a weakness with the Brampton Steelheads, it's the weaknesses inside their own blue line.
Definitely. Yeah. It stood out to me early in the year for sure. I thought they had injury issues. So various players were in and out of that lineup. Having said that, I did find that shutdown presence wasn't there. We saw some veteran players like Soa struggling in his own end, can produce, can help the offense, but they needed someone to really nail things down on the back end. So it's a valid point that if you're going to exploit them, it might be there, but don't forget they got pretty rock solid goaltending too and have tightened up to some degree defensively. But I think that assessment's right. If there's a weakness, that's where it'll be.
I think Connor Smith was a nice piece of shoring things up on that blue line. Obviously, says Captain Obvious over here. Love your point, and it's spot on about the goaltending. And hey, I am all for 8-6 and 7-5 first round playoff series game. So bring it on, Brampton, and maybe Oshawa, whoever it is. I'm here for it all the time. The other thing though, Dan, from Lowell's email that got me thinking, and I've acknowledged before, so not only am I short, thanks again to Scott Ray for reminding me of that, but I am also old and getting older by the day. In fact, I'm already older than I was when we started this episode. But Lowell talked about the in-arena experience in Brampton, which left a little to be desired. The sound system was meh. The microphones weren't even that great. And there just wasn't a lot to keep him engaged during the game, which got me thinking this. What else do we need? The old guy in me, I get it. It's 2025 Farwell, and this has been going on for a long time. But I'm of an age and a generation where just going to the game was enough. What more do you need than the product on the ice? But again, I get it. What do you make of this, though, Dan? When we're going to the arena, and we'll make this exclusive to junior hockey, what should teams be doing to keep the fans entertained between whistles?
Well, you know, it's a tough question for me because I'm like you, Mike. The hockey was always enough for me, and people talk about the experience and the fans are too quiet and this and that and the other thing, and the in-game entertainment and that stuff has always just been noise to me because I'm there for the hockey. So I'm an outlier. I understand that. So people that are looking for the experience, I don't know. I'm sure it's different from patron to patron. Some people love the cranked music. Some people love the intermission games. So I don't know if you're ever going to nail it, but I think when you have a mostly empty arena, you've got to work harder to create atmosphere. So that's a given. I think one of the very least things we can demand of our franchises are just basic game production values. So the things like, I did notice the PA system, you couldn't hear, the announcements were hard to make out. Is there an upgrade there that's possible so that the fans at least, because one of the things that just makes things worse when you've got little atmosphere and one way you're trying to get more people into the building is they know the players, they know the team. So if you can't even hear the announcements, you're not hearing the names, you're not understanding who the players are on either team, that piece of the engagement's missing. So, I mean, there's little things like that, Mike, that I'd point to. But really, the only way you're ever going to get great atmosphere in a building is to get more fans in there. And so you've got to look at ways to have a bottom line standard of game production, I think. That's a starting point. And then the other stuff, the entertainment, definitely out of my lane. So I'm not sure.
I think you nail it though, Dan, because there are some really simple things that I think every team should strive for, right? In terms of the basic production. And heck, I could go on, and I won't on this episode, but we'll get into it more as time goes on because I've been on this soapbox before, but about the production value of the broadcasts in this league. This league is growing not only when it expands, but the number of franchises, but just in terms of popularity, in terms of reach. You want to put your best foot forward. And when you have people paying customers in your arena, absolutely, you want to do a minimum of things at a very high standard to enhance that fan experience. I was trying to remember, and I should have Googled, but there was a tagline for a company. I used to think it was Lexus. A buddy once told me it was steam whistle beer. So forgive, like, that's a pretty broad range. But the tagline was along the lines of, we do one thing and we do it really well. So if it was Lexus, they make cars. If it was steam whistle, they make beer, whatever it is. But I think teams should maybe consider that. You don't have to do everything, but pick those two or three things that you can execute perfectly to enhance the game experience and go from there. And I think if every team, instead of feeling overwhelmed like they might, that, oh, well, we saw this in another market, or we saw that in another market, or we saw this in the pros or whatever, and thinking they have to do 16 different things, find your three and do them really damn well.
That's a great point. And it'll be your brand, right? That'll be your thing. And because executing something well, they talk about that with players, right? You might not be McDavid in terms of skating or skill, but find the thing that you do and do it well, because that's what's going to get you noticed. So that'll be your brand. And I think the Steelheads need to find that from a game production standpoint in order to woo the fans back and get them coming time after time.
Real quick, even though it's not my favorite thing, I'll never forget one of my favorite in-arena promotions. They used to do it in Guelph where you had to build a hamburger. Two people go out on the ice. One lies on the blue line. He's the bottom bun. His teammate has to run to the other blue line to pick up the patty for the burger, the toppings, etc. And then the guy that's doing the picking up of the toppings, his buddy's just lying there on the blue line. Guy runs from blue line to blue line, drops the toppings on the bottom bun. And then the guy doing the running is also the top bun. And so you have to jump on top of the pile, so to speak. And I'm telling you, this one race was so close, and the guy supermanned on top of his buddy. Listen, the patty, the bacon, the tomato, there's not a lot of cushion there. I don't know how the guy on the bottom survived, but oh, I laughed out loud mid-broadcast, even though it was happening during my intermission. I couldn't help but chuckle at what happened on the ice at the Sleeman Center. And I know it's the pros, but one of my favorites I saw at the at a Washington Nationals game, the mascot race, anyway, was the president's race. You had George Washington, Abe Lincoln, a couple of other, I think Nixon was out there. And of course, Nixon cheated. AO to our friends listening in Michigan. Anyway, that was kind of a fun mascot race to see too. Just even though I don't love it, I saw some of that stuff. And you know what? That enhanced my experience.
Well, and if you're talking about promotional genius, right? And I know there's people out there that are great promotional minds. So just come up with your idea, pitch them to the Steelheads. They need some help.
All right. The closer we get to the end of the season, the closer we get to the NHL draft. And Dan and I like to keep our eyes on those draft eligible players. We finish every one of our episodes with our prospect of the week. Dansky, who you got this week?
Well, it lines up nicely with our themes this week, Mike, because I've got a guy who's making those Brampton Steelheads even more potent, and that is Aiden Lane, Mike. So he was a fourth round pick, Harvard commit, signed with the Steelheads with all the rule changes, et cetera, et cetera. 3 goals, 2 assists in his last 3 games, 10 points in 10 games so far with the Steelheads. One more weapon in the toolbox for whoever's going to have to deal with them in the playoffs. So Aiden Lane is my guy, Mike.
All right. I'm going with some recency and hometown bias with mine, but my prospect of the week this week is none other than Tanner Lamb of the Kitchener Rangers. The recency bias, of course, because he picked up his first career hat trick in a home win on Friday night over North Bay. And, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but he got all 3 goals in the third period. But what happened next is what caught my attention the most. And I'll back you up several months when I was talking to a coach in the league, and he brought up Tanner Lamb as somebody that had caught his attention. And I found that interesting because Lamb is a smaller player, and not to belabor the point, but we've already identified, hey, small guy over here. He might as well just call me Shorty on the podcast. But in hockey, that stuff kind of matters. And maybe Lamb's got some work to do in his own end. But this coach said to me, he said, you watch Tanner Lamb. And the next thing you know, you look at the stats and there's another 2 assists. There's another 2 assists. And it just keeps going and going. Well, what did Lamb do to follow up his hat trick? He picked up 2 assists and the Rangers win the next night in Owen Sound. He now leads the Rangers in assists. And I'll tell you what, for a smaller guy, he is less shy. Not completely you know, courageous in those corners, but he's less shy about getting mixed up in some of the dirtier areas on the ice. He goes to the net for some of those goals. I see these things. It's a recency bias and maybe a hometown bias, but I'm going with Tanner Lamb for my prospect of the week.
Well, and our prospect of the week is about recency, right? Who's doing it recently? And Tanner Lamb, I've noticed a definite uptick in his game in the last few weeks. Like you said, he's battling a little more on those defensive battles and positioning. His game's rounding out, but you're right. He just keeps chipping away at that score sheet. And it surprised me early in the year when I looked to see how far up that score sheet he was, because he is quietly just piling up points. And he's a kid that makes something of nothing frequently with his hands and skill level.
Just like that coach said, right? You think you didn't notice him, and then you look down and, oh, ho-hum, just another two assists for Tanner Lamb. And on your Aiden Lane point, another guy with NCAA possibilities for him, but playing in this league, this landscape, Dan, the sands continue to shift. And I know next week you and I will be getting a little bit deeper into the meeting that's happening this week, as reported by Elliot Friedman on Hockey Night in Canada. Now, we knew that the NHL would like to kind of guide the CHL through its expansion process, et cetera. But I think one of the big things that might come from this meeting, the NHL wants to get its grimy little paws on more 19-year-old players, as far as I'm concerned, with as they renegotiate a CBA. So things are just in such a state of flux right now.
Yeah, and you just touched on something I'm sure I'll expand upon next week, but that trust factor. What's in it for who, and are they looking out for your best interest? That's what will be critical in this discussion.
All right. And Dan, when you mentioned, yeah, Aiden Lane, the NCAA, that rule change this year has created almost a seismic shift, I would say, at this point. And it's going to take a while for all of these sands to settle at the bottom of the jar, at least I think from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a little bit too much shifting right now for the NHL's liking, apparently, which is why we have this coming up.
That man right there, his name is Dan Mahar. You'll find him on X at his name, Dan Mahar. I'm Mike Farwell at Farwell_OHL. Interact with us there. Send an email to OHLpodcast@rogers.com, because we love talking to other junior hockey fans. And we will be back talking to you 1 week from today on the OHL Podcast.